You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
I'm Sean the Orange Course, a retro game fan from the U.S.
And I'm Kevin Vink Tambernino, an import gaming fan who took things one step further and moved to Japan.
Together, we make Famicom Dojo, a podcast that explores the Japanese origins of today's video games and consoles.
And speculates about their future, assuming they have one.
It's modern games with a retro twist.
This is the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast.
This week we could talk about a video game console older than either of us, the Atari 2600. Future Retro is about a new 2600 game, and Piloshan discusses an Atari contemporary. I mean, we usually talk retro, but this episode is pretty retro. Where did I leave my pedals? Yes, we were born to play all this video games.
And we're back.
Hey, Vink.
Hey.
It's like we never left.
So, what's happened to you in the time since we've recorded the last podcast?
I think I was having mic issues. No. I mean, hey, well, you were here in America, for
yes,
those who
I was.
Didn't listen to Denshi Mail, the previous one. And you really should go back and listen to that. But if you're here now, we'll recap a little bit.
Right.
Vink was here. We had our stake bet, and he convinced me to buy an Atari 2600.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I didn't think it took a lot of convincing. Well, the moment you told me that you never owned an Atari 2600,
right,
kind of cemented that you needed to have one.
Well,
where
someone was
going to pull away your like retro geek card.
And I was really hoping for like more thunderous applause, at least in my head there, for that. That admission there. It's like, oh, well, you know, good for you, Sean. You finally a man now.
I don't know what goes on in your head, but you're not going to get a response to that from anything.
Apparently yeah. That was too much information. But yeah, I never owned my own. I had played one in the past, so I'm not a complete noob to it.
Good job, Sean. You own an Atari 2600 now.
Jesus.
Now you're not a disappointment.
Well, you know, 40 years late is better than never, I suppose.
True.
38?
When did it come out? 77,
like
right?
Well, it's everything I own says 78, so...
Okay.
Maybe 70... same year as Star Wars? I have no idea. There is this Raiders of the Lost Ark cartridge. I'll get to that, but it doesn't seem like it works.
Okay.
Anywho, but yeah, like I got this, and I really am gaining an appreciation for what the video game market was like at the time and what possibly could have led to the crash as well, because not having a lot of experience with video games prior to the NES, I think a lot of what I assumed about what gaming was like in those days is really just not accurate at all. It's just like, well, you know, it looks a little worse based on like the SG-1000, that one mode of graphics you can do with those card games. You stick in and like the ones that don't work with the power base converter because it's too old of a graphics mode.
Ah, okay. The
like those.
The My Card games, yeah.
Yeah, those. So I always thought that, you know, well, you know, it's like an NES, but just a little bit worse. And oh
what? I mean, wow.
Because I should probably reiterate that like my pre-NES gaming was done on an Apple IIe,
which in some instances looked better than the NES, depending on what you're playing.
Right, and in some instances could look as bad as an Atari, but for the most part didn't.
It really depended on what you're playing. Like they had a low res mode in that, which was lower resolution than the Atari. But I guess, and the sound is pretty. You know what? Atari 2600 sound is not too bad. It's just they didn't have a lot of cartridge space to work with it. Like, the chip is not terrible. They just couldn't access a lot of memory. I mean, most games are like 2K, 4K. I think 8K is, like, some of the larger ones.
Yikes, huh?
Of course, Atari people...
Big spenders.
of course, Atari people are going to correct me on this one, but regardless, I find that more incredible than anything with some of the things, especially homebrew people have been able to do with it.
Indeed. And one particular homebrew game was made by a good friend of the show, Joe Grisafi.
We'll get to it.
Oh, will we? Okay. Oh, that's yes. a great tease.
Don't worry.
Then.
You can sponsor an episode of the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast. Just go to littlepodcast.com, find Famicom Dojo, and click the sponsor button. Check out with PayPal or a credit card, and let us know what wonderful thing we should say about you, our lovely sponsor, in this space.
Well, before we get into my specifics, then, if you have anything in general you want to say about the Atari 2600.
This was not the first system I played. The first video game system in my memory is the Intellivision, actually. So when I saw an Atari for the first time, I felt it was a step back graphically. But the relatives of mine who had the Atari had all kinds of cartridges for it, though. And I remember playing that Pac-Man game and not being as horrified as you were when you first saw it.
God.
One of the main things setting the Atari back, of course, was that it was only able to have 128 bytes of RAM. Mm. So, like, despite the size of the cartridge that, you know, that might have been, you could only access so much at the same time. And, of course, limited number of sprites as well. Like, that's what... Do you want to talk about when you first saw it?
Wait, like, as a kid, you mean?
I guess, or... I liked where you were going, where you thought it was a little bit worse than the NES.
Right. Well, like, my memories of what it actually looked like just aren't accurate at all. Or, you know, maybe the one game I played at the time was just not representative of the gamut of quality... that yeah. you're running the system, but the one I remember the most was playing this Smurfs game, where I think
that's a great game.
See, yeah, right. So it gave me a rosier picture of what the Atari could be than it probably was in general.
But like that game is only 4 screens long, so they used a lot. But no, I remember the first one you have to jump over a fence. The second one you have to avoid the spider. The third one I forget. And then
that's
last
probably
one,
farther than I've ever gotten. Right. Yeah. So this is my experience with this console. Like a friend of my mother's had one for her son who I guess was moved out at the time. So this is the 80s we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
And it's like she was not sure how to hook it up. But you know, I was hooking up our NES, which at the time we would rent when we had one. And I was quite familiar with how to do this, but she was convinced it was too advanced for me and would never let me do that. And her son's name just came back to me now. I just realized that's really funny. Anyway, so I would you know just long to play this game, and probably because I was so terrible at it, also for being so young, I never got very far. It was just like you know the challenge of trying to get to a point that I could you know play more. I didn't realize how actually short it was. So. Yeah, I've always wanted to go back to the Atari well, but never really had the motivation until you said that we needed to play your copy of Conjoined for our video.
Yep.
All right, so this is how this happened. You came along and said we needed to play Joe Grisafi's new Conjoined Atari homebrew game, which is on an actual cartridge, but you did not have an Atari 2600 with which to play it.
Okay, so let's stop right there.
Let's
stop right there just so I can get in that this is my future retro.
Oh, fair enough. So I want to talk about the game itself.
I just want to point that out. So
right on.
So I don't have to come up with another one later. Yeah, okay.
Right. But in order to play this game and get in the video while you were in the States with me would require us to have an Atari 2600 or, you know, equivalent that could actually play the games. So we went over to Gaming Generations, which is a nice little chain within Wisconsin. I don't think it's outside of Wisconsin yet, but it has a few locations around the state. So the one we went to in particular had 4 models, I believe it was. There was like a 6 switch and a 4 switch, which is the one I got, and like a smaller like
The Atari 2600 Junior, which was the 86 model, and they also had the 1982 Vader model.
Right, the black one that was came with like a, well, I don't know if it came with it, but it was inside of an actual like Atari tote case thing.
Oh,
so
was
that was
it?
Pretty cool. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, so, yeah, 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 yeah.
So the six switch one was pricier and didn't fully function.
Switches was broken, yeah.
Yeah, and they had tried to fix it once already. So the one I have was guaranteed to be fully functional, more or less. So what made this choice difficult and why Vink didn't get his own smaller one was that they only had the one power supply.
And no joysticks.
Yeah, no joysticks, no paddles, nothing. So fortunately, it is electronically compatible with Sega Master System and Genesis controllers. So I've been using those. No problem there. And maybe MSX. I haven't tried that, though.
Like, I was originally the one who wanted to get... I was the one who wanted to go get... an Atari, because I wanted to play, this game that I got. And I have a bunch of Atari games here, too. I've been collecting them over the years.
Oh, okay.
So I've got a copy of Yar's Revenge right next to me right now, which is a classic. Nice. You bought a copy, right? Did you play it yet?
I did. Okay, so this is what I picked up. I picked up not one, but two copies of Pac-Man, because one was the Sears arcade brand of one, and the other one was the Atari one.
I believe they're code identical, though. But
they must be. But it was cheap enough that I didn't really care, because I think they were like marked down to a dollar each. But I think I got them for like a quarter combined. something like that. But then I also got Ms. Pac-Man. I got Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr. Yep. Yar's Revenge is one of them. Oh dear, I can't remember everything. The point was to collect as many games as we could that were also on NES for comparison's sake. Yeah. Because I'm like, well, how different could they possibly be?
You were really thinking that?
Oh yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I didn't know.
But
I didn't know. You told me how bad it was. It's like, oh, it can't be that bad.
Yep.
Basically, we've enshrined this moment reenacted anyway for one of the videos that we recorded while you were here. So I don't want to give too much away. But you know, the other reason for getting this was much like getting my PS4 for Kickstarter games is I was not sure if I pledged for Conjoined or not.
Yep.
And regardless of whether or not I did, Joe got a hold of me on Facebook recently and asked for my address, so I'm getting a copy anyway.
Oh, great. Did you get the boxed one or just the cart?
I don't know. I should probably check my Kickstarter history. I tried to explain to you over the steak bet dinner
that
I
pledged for so many things, and you never get anything.
Right.
Oh, no. Very. I mean, you'll have to watch the video we did about it, but I'm very pleased with how this thing turned out. We can talk about the gameplay a little. Now you've played some more Atari 2600 games after I left, right?
Yes.
And admit it, like this Conjoined game, this new game, is probably beats out a lot of them.
Oh, definitely. Like, you know, the controls are pretty tight. The graphics are pretty good. I mean, you know, for a game that has nudity in it, there's really like no hint. Or sorry, a movie that has nudity in it, there's like no real hint of it in the game, except for, you know, everything is monocolored, like all the sprites are, so we can pretend.
So they're all
naked.
They're all naked. It's all fine. Yeah.
It's just a very G-rated game for, you know, such a.
I guess you can't. Thing is, it's hard to not be a G-rated game, because like even the games that were like selling themselves as being incredibly violent or sexy, you know, you can only do so much with 128K, 128 bytes of RAM.
Bytes.
Well, like, not K bytes, and that's why your Apple II had 1,024 times as much RAM.
Good grief.
So you have to keep that in mind when you're looking at these games, that the fact that they were able to do much of anything is pretty incredible.
Right. I mean, just looking at the differences between these games, because Donkey Kong was such a rude awakening. I mean, Mario looked okay, but Donkey Kong, what the hell is he? He's like just some brown blob of things.
Well, the main thing is it was very hard to have multicolored sprites. They had to be in like different layers. If you look into the programming of the Atari, and especially like go to Atari Age, you really should be a member of that.
Okay.
It's or at least lurk there. I mean, mm-hmm. I think I'm a member, but I haven't posted in a long time. But like, mad props to the things those guys are doing. I mean, not those guys. I mean, they do a lot of cool stuff themselves. But like the things that get promoted on their site as well.
Mm.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing the tricks and things that they have to do to make things happen. Like smooth scrolling is not something that can happen easily. They have to do all kinds of weird stuff to make that happen.
Well, there are some games I've played since that actually have kind of impressed me with their capabilities. I don't want to jump ahead too much, but.
I got
a few more games to play because it turns out that my brother-in-law got an Atari 7800.
Yeah.
So like he basically inherited, he was given a bunch of games by one of his aunts who was just going to throw all this stuff out. And there's some cool things. And like there's a couple of copies of Pitfall with different labels. I don't know why, but like one of them didn't seem like it was working.
We wanted to get you Pitfall, yeah.
Right, so there you go. So there's two copies. Maybe I can, you know, hold on to one for him for a bit.
Do you have Pitfall 2? That's one of my favorite Atari games. Pitfall 2 is wonderful.
Just the first one. And I have Super Pitfall on both NES and Famicom, I think. And that was the one that I played most when I was a kid. And this is nothing alike. Like, you know, they're very much trying to capitalize on the whole Mario thing with that.
I got to say, I have never played Super Pitfall.
Really? Okay.
Is it good? So, it's good? It's worth
it. I have some nostalgia for it, but I can't really say if it's good or not. But that's like the thing about the Atari for me in general. It's like I have no nostalgia for it whatsoever except for that one Smurfs game. And even then, it was just always like this thing I always wish I could have done but never really got a chance to. And I didn't dwell on it too much. But I've been picking through like this massive stack of games, and I pulled out a few that I thought were pretty good. There's this crazy one called like a Crystal Castle, which is like an isomorphic Pac-Man game with a bear that you can jump over the ghosts. It's very strange.
I mean, you must have played that at the arcades though. That's a classic. That's
really
is that
it's not just for Atari.
No. It was an arcade game, and I think I had it for my Apple II, actually.
Interesting. Well, he had some stuff for 7800, which I haven't tried yet, but you know, I figured because it wasn't like the exact generation of game I wanted to look at, I would save that for last. I wouldn't get a false positive impression of the 2600. But you know, the whole thing about nostalgia is just basically why I can look at it kind of more clinically and not feel like, oh, this was a great game, and that there really is such a huge variety of quality. Like there was a game he had called Adventure, and it's like you're just a square, like a tiny little square on the screen, picking up things and running around a maze with this background music, which is something that you typically don't hear in a lot of the games that I've been playing. So that was kind of neat. Maybe they used up all the RAM on the background music and couldn't render a character.
That's the game with the dragon ducks.
Right, yeah. Like, what are those things? So I figured out now that I have to run around with that sword. This is run away. You don't attack them. It's run away if you have the sword on the screen where they're at. Otherwise, they will follow you and eat you when you sit in their belly with whatever you're holding. So it's despite the fact that it's graphically like really unimpressive, I'm sort of taken by its ingenuity in gameplay.
Oh yeah, it's a classic. I mean. Like it was probably one of the most ambitious console games of the time, and it sold very well. But it has another very important place in video game history. You know what that is, right?
I have no idea.
I need to get a new co-host. It's the first console game that ever contained an Easter egg.
Oh, what Easter egg is that?
The name of the creator of the game, because at the time Atari wasn't allowing their makers to put their names on the games or in the game, so no, they were just made by Atari.
Sure.
Like, but let's see, Warren Robinette, I believe, I hope I'm saying that right. He wanted to get his name in, so he made it that a very hard to access room that was like one, you know, you had to go just the perfect pixel led to a room that had his name in it.
Wow. So it's like the Chris Houlihan room, but like important.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's as important as can be, I guess, but like, yeah, it's the first Easter egg, but it's, yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, clearly I know nothing about this system and its games, but man, I always wanted to do a video about the Famicom launch titles, and now that I have access to a bunch of their Atari counterparts, I can kind of understand where Nintendo was coming from, wanting to make their own hardware with better specs. Even though I'm sure that, you know, there were other contemporary systems out at the time, like the Intellivision, that could do better than the Atari. You know, Nintendo being a company that published on arcade games, wanting to get something better, I'm sure, was a big factor in all of this. And Coleco was the one who published the Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr. games that I had. What else? My brother-in-law also had Pac-Man Jr. So even though the first Pac-Man game was not impressive in the least and was barely recognizable as Pac-Man, Pac-Man Jr. is a pretty decent game. And is really similar, actually, to the Pac-Man one you showed me that was emulated. The 2600 could do it. Impressive things given enough time and motivation, it seemed. And man, I feel like I should just call like the 52 and 7800 just like Atari is like 1, 2, and 3, just because that's basically all those numbers mean anyway.
What
do you mean? What? 2600, 5200 is twice 2600.
Oh,
7800 is three times.
I get that. I thought you were going to make the contention that it was just that they were all the same system, just rebranded. Okay.
No. I obviously they had different internals. Obviously. But so
I like that the 7800 was back compatible with 2600.
Cool. So there was more than one cart, or maybe just one cart that I saw that was said it was compatible with both systems, which really means it's just a 2600 game that they spent a lot of time on. So.
Well, you should really go back and get that 5200. I mean, I know the controller's crap, but that's and it's huge.
It is enormous.
If I didn't have luggage constraints, I would have brought that back because that is, you know, and the thing is, if you looked at games like that, you can kind of make that comparison that the NES was not super far. I mean, it's definitely farther ahead than the 5200, but you know, you're getting closer. The version of Pac-Man on that looks like Pac-Man, you know.
And fun story about that, that was released by Tengen. And first as a legally published version, and then as the black unlicensed cart, and then by Namco back in a gray cart. And as far as I can tell, it's the same source code. Because, maybe Namco did, or Liquid developed it. You know, they just republished it. I'm not really sure what happened there.
Yeah. I thought what was really interesting was that some of those Tengen games
Thank you.
on the NES were actually originally made by Sega. For the Famicom.
Indeed.
So, like, all three major players in that can set aside their differences and were able to come together and release a shoddy port of Afterburner.
Oh, God. Well, I mean, let's be fair. At least in Japan, those companies were able to publish those things on the Famicom directly, whereas Namco had no presence in the U.S. at the time, and then relied on Tengen to release their games. So you got Afterburner, but it wasn't on a licensed cart.
Yeah,
for instance. So I wouldn't exactly say that they were working together per se. And then, yeah. You know, and then SNK released everything on all the other consoles anyway, as we get to in a future video. But man, I gotta say, for as interesting as this is, and as much as I'm going to like still collect this stuff,
yeah,
I can't really say I'm gonna play it. You know, I mean, there are a handful of games that I'm kind of interested in, but a few already I feel like I've exhausted the possibilities. Even though I find them academically interesting, the one exception is something called Summer Games.
Epics. Yes.
Okay, so you're aware of this? Like, yeah. I feel like they were trying so hard to be track and field.
Kind of. Although, like, I got to look at my history, because you never played any of the game series on Apple II?
No.
They had Summer Games, Summer Games 2, Winter Games, California Games. You must have played California Games.
Maybe. Was there an NES version of that?
Yes, there was.
California Games.
And I think NES got a port of World Games as well, and the Famicom Disk System got Winter Games.
Oh, what? Oh, hey, there's a JonTron video about California Games.
There you go.
All right. Well, that was very interesting. So my brother-in-law and I played it together.
Awesome.
Alternating or playing simultaneously as needed. And I'm like, okay, I'm pretty sure if this is anything like Hyper Olympic or track and field, that you have to alternate back and forth with this. We couldn't figure out swimming until we read an online manual. I forget what else, but we went all the way through the entire course of games. And you know, for playing an Atari game, we spent a lot of time on it before we were done. That was pretty impressive.
Can I geek out for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Now, the game series, which is like California Games, blah, 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 is very, very important to the history of Atari because Epics, who made all those games, the Epics Corporation, who made, California Games and blah, 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 lots and lots of stuff, also was working to develop a handheld called the Handy, which they were going to release, but couldn't because they were going out of business. So Atari picked up the rights to it, and that is the Atari Lynx.
What?
Yes. And that's why one of the launch titles for that system was California Games.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at the NES box, too, and the California Games art here, which I recognize. Yep. I didn't realize this was a Milton Bradley published game. Very similar to Time Lord, was it?
Yep.
I believe, which is a rare developed game. I'm looking at some screenshots here, and I recognize like the surfing and the skateboarding, which I remember playing in this now.
Yep.
This is like Hacky Sack 2? What is this?
Yep, they call it Footbag, but yeah, it's Hacky Sack. And they made a very decent port of it for the Atari 2600, too. I used to own it.
Okay.
And it had really, really good music and a cool title screen. Oh, man, I wonder if my mom still has any of my Atari carts. I should ask.
You should have asked her while you were there.
Yeah, they'd be in the base. They'd be in the basement somewhere, and that could mean any one of 60 boxes. You know.
Well, when you're back in August, I'm sure that we can return it to you then. After I ask them to look for it, and they give it to my in-laws when they're square dancing or whatever.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. That's how we'll figure this out. But,
so, all right. Yeah. Very important question. I probably should have looked it up before the show. But was Popeye first released in NES, or is there like an Atari version I could track down? I'm going to look that up right now.
I don't know. I mean, I know Mario Brothers, Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong Jr. were all released for the Atari, and those are Nintendo titles. But
okay, yeah, there is one, it looks
what
like.
What about Rally X? Not Rally X. Whatever.
It doesn't look, I mean, you know, for Atari, it doesn't look too bad, actually. That's the other thing that's kind of surprised me, and I guess it makes sense given the amount of memory it has to work with.
Yeah.
But you don't see a lot of circles in the Atari, and I'm guessing that's because of how little information it takes to describe a rectangle. You just need like an XY start position and an XY end position.
Yep.
And a color fill, and you're done.
It's the same when programming for the Apple II. Circles require a lot longer code.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they definitely gave it their best with Pac-Man Jr., but that's why, yeah. like, you know, the pellets you pick up are all, like, long rectangles. Like, yeah. I don't know why you couldn't do, like, shorter, slightly thicker ones, but there you go. Whatever. It works.
Well, it all comes down to what other things were going to be inhabiting the area of that pixel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the harder thing. Yeah, it's... But you can see that when you go Miss Pac-Man, which you also have, it improved it a lot, and then Pac-Man Jr. improved it even more.
Mm-hmm.
You know how things look, but yeah, it's always kind of rectangles, wasn't it? Even in Pac, was it rectangles yeah. in Pac-Man Jr. too?
Yes, it was.
Oh, okay.
And same in Crystal Castle.
Yep.
So apparently, Parker Brothers published the Atari version, so I'm not even sure who the developer is exactly. Popeye.
No, I don't know. Could have been Parker Brothers. They had a games division.
Well, I suppose, but like I thought the whole point of this thing was that it was supposed to be it was supposed to be a Donkey Kong game, but it wasn't, so that implies some kind of Nintendo involvement, but I don't. I'm questioning this whole thing now because Nintendo published.
Oh, okay.
Nintendo published the NES version.
Yes, because it's their game.
Is it? That's what I'm asking. Did they actually develop it?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, under license from whoever owns Popeye. Yeah.
So Parker Brothers just happened to publish it because Nintendo wasn't a publisher yet, just like Coleco did the.
Coleco did games. Donkey Kong, which is funny because...
This is the point where we should probably...
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you first.
I was going to say it's funny with Coleco because they were, of course, producing it for their own ColecoVision, which was the pack-in.
Right.
The pack-in game for their system. But, you know, there's a lot of money in the Atari Pi as well, so, of course, they made an Atari version as well.
Which was probably inferior. No, I'm wondering if this is the same thought that SNK had about making those ports for their... I'm just spoiling the whole video I made. Never yeah. mind. Anyway.
but Popeye was made... It's an arcade game. You know, Nintendo right. made the arcade game. And okay.
Maybe Parker Brothers, whoever the developer was, did like a port... authorized by Nintendo, yeah. and then Nintendo just published their own NES version. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Well, we'll firm up that story
yeah.
before we make a video about it. But I also wanted to give a shout out to, again, to Derek of Stupid Video Games, because he had this interesting Coleco Nintendo theory about if Nintendo wasn't like trying to court Coleco, to publish the NES, they were at least trying to model their marketing after Coleco, because there were a lot of really crazy similarities, plus the fact they were already publishing Nintendo's games at the time.
Yep.
But there is a well-known story about Nintendo trying to go to Atari about this, and that falling through yep. because of the Coleco deal with Donkey Kong, and Atari demonstrating something for the... Was it the 5200?
It might have been the 7800 at that time. 7800 was being developed around 84, but it didn't actually come out till several years later.
Okay.
Because the 5200 was 82, I believe, and was a tremendous disaster.
Sure. Well, you know, better make another one then, right?
Well, they started work on that before they realized it would be a disaster, and that's why... took a while to come out because of the video game crash.
Okay. Well, that's really all I got to say about Atari right now. I'm going to keep digging into it, and hopefully we'll learn more about what the heck I'm talking about. But I really am enjoying it, though. Like it's not purely academic, even though I still have a very analytical bent toward this whole thing. I'm enjoying some of the stuff for what it is. But yeah, right. having no nostalgia for it is definitely a weird trip.
Play like some games that hold up really, really well to even today. You should play River Raid.
Okay.
You should play Yar's Revenge.
Mm-hmm. I can't figure that game out, actually. I need some tips here. So like there's this fun colored neutral zone where I can't yep. shoot out of. There's yep. like a slow moving bullet that's always following me around the screen.
Yeah.
And there's something in a bunker that I can blow away, and that's as far as I get. Well, I can't ever seem to do anything else after that.
Well, the thing is, that's the thing. It's more complicated than most other Atari 2600 games, and I think that's why it has a good reputation, because you need to have strategy. It's not just shooty.
Well, the best I can figure is when it gets into its old spinny mode, I got to get it to run into its own bullet, but I haven't been able to get that to happen yet. Well, is that right? Why don't you want to tell me?
I haven't played it in several years.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
That's why I was picking up an Atari 2600, or trying to.
Sure.
Oh yeah, that's the reason that I didn't pick it up in the end, is because I was still planning to. I was even if you had been picking up one, but then when they had only one power plug, I still was thinking of getting it. But when they had no controllers, that was the end for me. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have been playing. There's a pair of paddles that need cleaning, because one of them doesn't work hardly at all, and the other one works only kind of. So, there are copies of, like, Breakout and Super Breakout, and, what was the game that we were playing? I can't remember, but, I have to like, try and clean them to see if they work. I also discovered that, like, a lot of games, because there were duplicates in this collection, like I mentioned. I'm guessing there were duplicates because one of them stopped working because they were dirty, is my guess. Yeah. Because there was always one that worked fine and one that just wouldn't work at all. And I'm pretty sure all I gotta do is just clean it.
Probably.
Because I've already gotten two of them to work just fine.
Yeah.
But, all right. I think that's enough. We should talk about a new old game.
All right. Yes, we were born to play on this retro game. Let's say on you.
Hey, what's your favorite movie? This week it's My Favorite Too, even if it's Roadhouse.
Roadhouse is the story of a big city bouncer with the secret power to rip people's throats out who comes to a small town full of really dumb people to be a bouncer there.
This is 10 Minutes About Your Favorite Movie.
Listen to 10 Minutes About Your Favorite Movie every Monday on the Little Podcast Network. So what do you got for me on Future Retro, as if I didn't know already?
In Future Retro, we talk about contemporary video games that have the potential to be remembered as classics.
Or classics that we played for the first time, or just more recently.
And in Pile of Shame, we talk about the games we haven't been playing, and we try to convince each other if we should.
Or not.
All right, the game that I am talking about is Conjoined. For the Atari 2600.
Oh, right. I mean, this is a really old game, right? Like, no one's played this in years.
No, this is a brand new game, and so far, probably less than 100 people have played it. Well, I don't know. I bet someone leaked the ROM already, but I mean, I bet less than 100 people have played it legally. And it's great. I really enjoyed the time that we played it. I would have definitely played it more had you not taken the Atari away. I still need to get myself a 2600, probably one of the small ones. Although when I come back in August, I should have more luggage space, so maybe I can even bring a wood panel one back with me.
Okay.
But it was very fun. It's a ladder game. It's an avoid the objects type of game. I don't know. It brought back a lot of memories of games that are played over just one screen games, which you don't see really ever anymore. You know, and the concept was very interesting. It's a fairly good adaptation of movie to game.
Really?
I would say so. I mean, it captures the ideas of having to do a surgery by collecting these different implements. The movie itself wasn't about collecting things.
Right.
But like, it was able to put in several elements from the movie, and I think in a funny way. I don't know. Tell me that it's not closer to the movie Conjoined than the Back to the Future game, where you throw... Okay, you're at the malt shop. Throw 50 shakes at 50 oncoming bullies is connected to Back to the Future.
Yeah, I mean, no. It does try to follow the plot of the movie as closely as possible.
Yeah.
Except, I mean, there aren't, like, literal floating full or broken hearts and just daggers...
All right. Okay.
Floating
yes.
through the air.
All
no
right. Okay.
But I mean,
okay.
I could yeah. see it as a metaphor.
Yeah, it's a metaphor
for the
it's
for
a
the
metaphor.
Plot. And then the point is to get to the end of the game, where
yeah.
you separate them. Which spoiler is something that attempts to be done in the film.
Everyone should see the film, and everyone can see it right now. Oh
yes, was it Kings of Horror or something?
I think so. Let's see.
It's on the YouTubes for free. I mean, you know, ad supported, of course, but
which yes, and but you should all get the DVD because it's got some nice, fun features like Call of Duty,
which has been accepted to more than one film festival.
That's interesting,
isn't it? Though,
if you just type
isn't
Kings
it?
Of
yep.
Horror, you'll
Kings
go,
of
you'll
Horror.
Go,
there it is.
Yeah, Kings of Horror. And just search on there for Conjoined.
There's also a review apparently by an outfit called Bloodbath and Beyond, which looks just like the Bed Bath and Beyond logo.
There we go.
And there's a trailer on Kings of Horror. It has more views than some of our videos.
Really? That's wow. There we go.
Goodness. Indeed. Indeed. So, props to Joe for that film and that game.
Yeah.
Definitely. I can't wait to play my copy. Thank you, Joe. And we will see what else he has up his sleeve. I would love to see Lars the Emo Kid at
yes.
any point. Hint, hint. Wink, wink. Apparently it was playing somewhere in the state legitimately, and I missed
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it has not been playing in my hometown yet.
True.
Or my current town. But this isn't the first it is the first, but it's not going to be the last of the games that Joe makes based off
Indeed.
The properties. Apparently Dead of Night is getting a Vectrix game.
Yes.
And Laughing Boy is I think Atari. Lars the Emo Kid should be on, like, the Virtual Boy. I don't know. I've never seen Lars the Emo Kid. I don't know.
Neither
have I.
Going
on there, but Virtual Boy needs more games, so.
Yes.
So, what about you?
Shame. What about me? All this talk of... the Atari and systems that are older than the NES reminds me that I have a bunch of SG-1000 games.
Oh.
And they're not mine. They technically belong to Chief of World 9 Gaming.
Okay.
But I have his non-working Sega Mark III, which can play all these games, you know, backwards compatibly.
Okay.
Of course. There's even a copy of Lode Runner just hanging out there taunting me. Hold on a second. I got to review this. I think I took a photo, so I wouldn't have to actually leave the podcast
okay.
to look at it. But let's see. Oh yeah, this is gold cartridge.
Okay.
Cute.
Oh, those are Mark III carts though. Those
okay,
won't work.
Those
on
are Mark III carts. Okay, so
those
I
are Mark
I just,
III carts.
I just have one SG-1000 cart then.
Yeah.
Maybe two. Nope, those are all Mark III.
I saw like a Lode Runner in your
yeah Lode Runner I mentioned
yeah okay.
Space Harrier, so that's just, you know, the Sega Master System version.
Yep.
Alex Kidd, something in kanji. Great football. World soccer. Oh, Afterburner. Alien Syndrome. Opa Opa. And the last one nice. I can't read. So, I mean, you know, these are Master System games.
Yeah, yeah.
Essentially, but I have not gotten to play any of them, and I really feel like I should try to get a good Sega collection going, because
yeah,
I have this stuff. I should spend the dough on getting a working SG-1000 of some variety.
All right, we'll talk off pod. Let me see if I can get you one.
We've typically been a show that's only been like, you know, generation 3 onwards. So, you know,
yeah.
we know just based on that there's stuff that we've been missing. I'm afraid if Atari is generation 2, the first one must have been like Pong and stuff. Like, I don't even know.
Yeah, like Pong systems. And we could talk about those. I had one.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh.
But I bought it at a garage sale in like 1990. So it's not, yeah.
What about those Nintendo Color System games? Like, were those second generation too?
I mean, the whole thing with video game generations, it really depends on who you ask. Sure. I usually go with what's written on Wikipedia because it's easy to access. You know. And let's see what they say about that. Hold on. So the NES is third generation, so Atari is second. Hold on. Okay, second generation. Let's go back a little bit. First generation, 1972 to 1980. So we're talking like the original Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
The basically a lot of Pong games, TV tennis games. Telstar. That's the one I had. I had a Telstar for Pong machine. And basically, like, these are all systems that everything that was going to be in them was already, like, built in. I mean, the Odyssey the Odyssey had removable circuit boards, but there were no additional carts to buy, really, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, a lot of them had lots of just variations of Pong in them, or Breakout, or, you know, things like that. And that's first generation.
Okay.
I think also you could include those, like, the rifle shooting games, like what are included with the Odyssey. But, like, other than that, it was basically Pong.
Okay.
And then second generation is, like, cartridges.
Okay. That makes sense. So Nintendo skipped the second generation by publishing other systems.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, I mean,
well, they had, like, you know, the Game & Watch stuff. So that was
They did Game & Watch during that time. Yeah,
and of course arcade games.
Yeah. A lot of them, but yeah, for home games, yeah, they kind of took a little time off. Now, here's a bit of interesting trivia about second generation games, or yeah, I believe it's still considered second generation, but Famicom Dojo, when it first started, the actual store, was not called Famicom Dojo. When it was originally, I don't remember the original name, but it was originally a toy store, and they sold like model trains and stuff.
Okay.
When it first opened, but they switched over to video games. But when the Famicom first came out, they were in such demand, they were sold out everywhere, that shop couldn't get enough of them in stock. So instead, they bought a bunch of Super Cassette Vision systems. But like, it was very obvious to tell right away that they couldn't hold a candle to the Famicom, so they only sold them for a little while. Okay. And they don't have any Super Cassette Vision stuff in the store anymore, obviously.
Such a shame.
Yeah, I have got some Super Cassette Vision games.
Really?
Right now. I don't have a system yet.
Yet.
You know it's a yet.
Aspirations. I
mean, no, yeah. they're when it comes to video games, I'm trying to think of anything that I just won't buy.
Oh, sure.
like, I especially love the rare, weird ones. I want a Super Cassette Vision because I want to play the first ever video Dragon Ball game, which was on that system. There was also a very cool Lupin the Third game for that system. So, there's like every system has things that I want to get. I just don't have the room for it. I wish I had your video game dungeon.
It looks, I mean, yeah, the space, not the collection, right?
Yeah, the space. Yeah, yeah. Oh no, I've got more games than you do.
Oh yeah.
But you have way more space.
Seems like such a waste, doesn't it? It does. Well, I didn't want to bury the lead here for the whole podcast, but I think, were you ever annoyed by, this would have been a great introduction, were you ever annoyed by like how our parents or like, you know, people from that generation would like refer to Nintendo games or whatever as tapes?
Yeah.
I think I finally figured out why that happens so frequently.
Why is that?
Because Atari cartridges look a lot like 8-track cassettes. Like, a lot. The labels and the way that they sit and, like, just the shapes of the cartridges. I'm sure that was deliberate on Atari's part because 8-track was a thing, you know? And so, like, baby boomers who you know, grew up with that kind of stuff, they would see an Atari cartridge and go, oh, I know what that is.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. I can see that. But, like, yeah.
But the fact that someone, like, in this day and age would still call it that 30 years later, 40 years later, come on, get with it. And the carts are coming back. Thanks, Nintendo.
In Japan, they still call the games cassettes.
That's true, but they just don't know any better.
And even like the up to the 3DS, they say, because I'll be like, oh, you know, I've got a 3DS, and they're like, what cassettes do you have? And I'm like, none, because cassette is a dead format. Shut up, kid. Smack. Yep.
Oh god.
That's why I'm not allowed in playgrounds anymore.
Oh no.
No. But yeah, it's still referred to as cassettes. And when the Nintendo Switch was announced, some of my students were like, it's cool, it takes cassettes. And I'm like, ugh.
Heathens.
But it does. But the thing is, for Nintendo, you can't fault them because it actually says it right on the thing.
Right.
Yep. Yeah.
True. Fair enough.
They say it's
but
a cassette.
But just in Japanese, though, right?
Yeah, just in Japanese.
Yeah. The English
it's just
ones
in Japanese. But I mean, think about what a cassette is. Like, we think audio cassette, but cassette, case, et. Like, you know.
Yeah, I
it's
know.
It's a small
but
case which contains something.
I mean, if Kleenex started making beer tomorrow, do you think that we'd really think about that? It's just a brand name.
True. But think about, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I guess. Nintendo.
We know you're listening, Nintendo. I have nothing to say to you this time, though.
Yeah.
Should have gone Coleco.
If you're listening, Nintendo, I really hope you don't announce the price of your system anytime soon.
That would be terrible, and we wouldn't talk about
Wait,
it.
Wait, is that how it works? Is that I think we're just...
Yeah.
But think about it. If the Switch is like $300... Mm-hmm. Which would you rather have, the Nintendo Switch or an Atari 2600 and about 100 games?
Oh, well, the Switch easily. I feel like at this point, the choice between having a Switch and having a newer phone, I'm making an important sacrifice, I feel.
Yeah.
For all of you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Not for me at all. Not even a little bit. So hoping to see if any of those BioWare games come to the Switch.
You know, I'd say as long as the engine gets ported, like as long as someone has ported the engine to the system, if they don't come to the system, it's purely out of spite.
Ouch.
Well, it might be. I mean, you know, or like the fact that they feel that they would look so, but like, no, it's purely out of spite because like they even released a Mass Effect game for smartphones.
True, which I've still only kind of sort of played.
It's kind of fun, which is crazy that I've played it and you haven't.
It is crazy.
That, wow. I just realized how weird that is.
That's so weird. You should get that PS3 fix so you can play some more Mass Effect.
I saw a 160 gigabyte PlayStation 3 at a book off near my house for $100.
I might
just do that because, you know, I think because the system, like the drive doesn't work, but since the system itself does, I should be able to copy everything off the hard drive through like a LAN connection.
Okay.
Because there's only 40 gigs of stuff on mine, or 80, maybe 80. I think it's an 80 gig, yeah.
I'm not sure how that works on Sony, so.
And, I mean, for downloadable purchases, I just got to put in my PSN number and stuff, so.
Okay.
I don't know, but yeah, I should do that. I would like to play some of these games that I have bought.
To train your game, head over to our show notes at famicomdojo.tv/podcast for additional pictures, video, and bonus audio for this episode. Call us at 608-492-1923 to leave a voicemail for our Denchimail episodes, or send us a comment on Facebook or Twitter at Famicom Dojo. Consider leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes, and be sure to subscribe to Famicom Dojo on YouTube for our latest videos about retro, import gaming, and more. So that reminds me before I forget, speaking of BioWare, that I was recently on the UGO, a.k.a. the Unapologetic Geek Out podcast.
I didn't even know you played Yu-Gi-Oh!
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I never heard that joke before. I refrained from making it on the show, too. They were also at Nerd and Ty, and I was on their drunk cast.
All right.
I believe one of the aforementioned evenings of playing... Rock Band 4 from the Denchi Mail, if you guys listened to the last episode. But yeah, it was fun. They're doing their whole BioWare month here because N7 Day is November 7th. That was when the first Mass Effect came out in 2007. And ever since then, they've been releasing new tidbits or games or stuff on that day. And they released the Mass Effect Andromeda trailer this year. Next year will be the 10th anniversary. Oh, gosh. Mass Effect and Famicom Dojo are the same age?
Wow.
Weird. Anyway.
That is weird.
We talked about Dragon Age. And it's really hard to get through three games and their add-ons in about an hour. But we managed to do it. If you want to hear three guys nerd out about a video game series about dragons and stuff, then I recommend you go listen to that. It's probably already in our feed, honestly, by this point, but
it is.
Please do enjoy and check out their podcast. They do a bunch of different shows also, such as they have a Netflix and Kill, where they review something on Netflix. They'll do new movies as well, and then random stuff, but also the regular episodes. But they'll invite people like me along, and then they're hoping to get Vink at some point when he's not busy traveling and wrecking the schedule.
Sorry.
Yeah, they did already ask us once, but he was literally like traveling that weekend, so it was not going to happen. So since they wanted me for the Dragon Age stuff, I hopped on earlier in the month. So
is Dragon Age Origins, Dragon Age Origins worth getting?
Yes.
Is it? I saw it for $2.
Oh my God! Yes.
But I wasn't sure if that's the one. I know there was one game in the series that everyone's like, skip that one.
Dragon Age 2, probably, but I disagree with that assessment.
Okay. So is Origins a remake of the first game? Or
no,
is
Origins is the original game. It's called Origins because there are multiple Origins that you can start with to tell this story. And really the only difference comes in that first Origins part. And then as you go through the game, like characters will react to you based on like what race and gender you are.
Wait. So Dragon Age Origins is the first game in the series.
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was I thought the first game was just called Dragon Age.
No.
Oh, well then I will pick that up. $2.
Do it. It's a lot of fun. I enjoy it. Do the dwarf stuff last. That's all I got to say. But if you're a fan at all of, you know, high fantasy, J.R.R. Tolkien stuff, that'll be really familiar. If you are a fan of more low fantasy, like A Song of Ice and Fire, aka Game of Thrones, you will also enjoy it there because the influences are very apparent.
Game of Thrones is low fantasy?
Yeah, at least it starts out as low fantasy.
What determines high fantasy?
Well, I don't know, like really obvious, like, you know, magic is real and I'm gonna cast my fireball at you.
That's high fantasy.
Dragons and stuff are all over the place, and there's not really a lot of logic in how any of this works.
Ah, okay.
I think that's high
fantasy. So if it's logical, it's low fantasy.
Sure. I mean, there's still dragons and magic in A Song of Ice and Fire, but it takes a long time to build up to it. So you get to the high fantasy stuff later.
So Harry Potter, high fantasy?
I would think so.
Oh, okay. All right. That was a little aside, but no, I'll pick that up because what's the gameplay like? Is it a shooter?
No, God. Okay, have you ever played an MMO before?
Yes.
Have you played like how about World of Warcraft?
I haven't, but I'm familiar. I played Phantasy Star Online.
It's kind of like soloing an MMO. If that makes any sense, although you know,
so
like
Skyrim
like,
or something.
Sure, yeah. I mean, like Mass Effect 2. There's like the whole like, you know, dialogue and romance stuff, and they have their kind of own bent on it. And it's kind of weird in the first Dragon Age game because your main character, because there's so many origins, and race and gender opportunities, isn't voiced. So it's all you have to read all your responses and dialogue and stuff, but. You make your choices in a similar fashion, and it's still funny. It's just that you don't hear anything when you're speaking, more or less, but all the other characters are voiced, so it's very...
Okay.
It was very disconcerting after playing the first Mass Effect games, but I got into the swing of things enough that when Dragon Age 2 came along and the character was voiced, that I didn't feel as connected to it. But whatever.
Okay.
It's just my...
That's fine. Hey, as long as it's not a shooter, I'm in.
So. Well, they seem to have gotten around that limitation by the time Inquisition comes around and there's multiple races and genders and whatever. They have more budget by that.
All right.
Anywhoozle. But yeah, please do enjoy that podcast, and Vink, please do enjoy that game. And I will keep enjoying my Atari 2600.
Hooray!
And maybe my brother-in-law's 7800 if I ever crack that open. So to speak. But all right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. Thanks for listening to the Fan Account Dojo. And until next time, the dojo is...
Recommending that you play as... Oh, I forgot what you told me. Play as goblins last. Play as druids
dwarves
last.
Dwarves last.
I was like... You said that line, and I'm like, I'm going to save that for the end, but then I forgot it by the time we actually got
there. I mean, I guess the only exception is if you choose the dwarf origin, then maybe you want to see how things shake out right away, but I got to warn you, it's a big chunk of the game.
I suppose.
Or it feels like it anyway.
I'm going to play it, I'm going to wear red armor, and I'm going to name him Lister.
As Anders says in the second game, I hate the blooded right.
Famicom Dojo.
The Famicom Dojo video game podcast is produced every week by That's Orange LLC. Our theme songs, Famicom Thrash and RPG, were written and performed by the Amari Tones. Find them on iTunes and at amaritones.net. Pixel art by Lewis Lloyd Judson at lewistrations.co.uk. Find us at famicomdojo.tv/podcast, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever RSS feeds are downloaded. And, of course, head over to littlepodcast.com to listen to other great shows on the Little Podcast Network.